So today we are reading chapter 12 in the book of Amidbar. Very interesting chapter. And as I framed yesterday, we can understand this entire series of complaints or trials as really pertaining to the question of the leadership here, the way in which Hashem is leading them, and of course leading them through Moshe and his leadership, Aharon and his leadership, whoever else is part of the leadership structure, as we've seen added in the previous story, 70 elders to the leadership structure, whatever happening with Yeshua in that story, where he's somehow sidelined in that story, because Moshe didn't accept his jealousy or his anger over the 70 people becoming part of the structure, and so on. So now we have the story of Miriam and Aharon, and they're speaking about Moshe. In response to this, we get an angry response from Hashem, just like we get for all these complaints, but specifically against Miriam, although Miriam and Aharon are said to speak about Moshe. And a very important clarification of what is the difference between Moshe and all these other prophets. So we can probably see this as a counter to the previous story, right? In the previous story, we had Moshe delegating some of his prophecy, some of his leadership position to all these 70 elders, to all these other prophets, or making them prophets by delegating some prophecy to these elders. And now we have this sort of opposite reaction. So if so, then is Moshe equal to them? Is he on the same level of them? And that seems to have been the mistake of Miriam and Aharon. And we have this important story as clarifying that. Of course, this story gets used later by the Rambam for his very important principle, to him at least, of Moshe's prophecy being of entirely different kind of all the other prophets, right, including the prophets of his day, like Moshe and Aharon. But we can debate if that's theologically the point of the story here. It's for sure the point of there being another set of questions about Moshe's leadership, about Moshe's place, and this story clarifying it. And again, another way of spelling out the difference between this story and the previous story, or the connection between them, is that the previous story started with the Asafsef, right? The sort of lowest class people having problems with Moshe, with Aharon, with the leadership. And now we have not their problems, but the problems of the elite, the Aharon and Miriam, who are the highest people in the hierarchy, the closest to Moshe here, having also some kind of complaints about Moshe, and then being smacked down, so to speak, or maybe literally smacked down by Miriam getting tzaras and Moshe getting a talking to from Hashem to explain that no, Moshe's leadership is still justified even after all of this. So we can take these questions, these remarks in many directions, but this seems to be the context of this story. And of course, afterwards we have the story of the Meraglim, and then the story of Korach, which is an explicit challenge to Aharon's leadership, right? Not Moshe, but Aharon. So there seems to be all these series of stories which are very much clearly connected to the question of the legitimacy of the leadership, the story of the Meraglim has Yeshua in it. So again, connecting to the question of who is the successor of Moshe, who is the leaders under him, and so on. So let's read this story. And the story goes like this. Miriam and Aharon spoke b'Moshe. B'Moshe means about Moshe. And it seems like this language, there's discussion about this in the Mefarshim. This language usually means to be speaking against or derogatory of Moshe. So it's a speaking derogatory in parentheses, right? Not just a speaking about and praise. There must be a different way of, different idiom of saying when someone just speaks about someone in praise. But speaking about someone means here always, maybe usually when people speak about other people, it's not in praise. But here, especially, it means something like they expect something not nice about him. And more specifically, and the Torah gives us the complaint. It's about his wife. This Isha Kushis literally means an Ethiopian wife or Kushite wife that he took. And the sort of narrator adds, Ki Isha Kushis Lokach, because that actually happened, he took one. Of course, this is a very weird story because we've never heard of any Isha Chushis that Moshe took. What's going on here? Who is she? Who ever heard of her? There's a famous Medrash that has an explanation of this. But whatever it is, it seems like there's some complaint about Moshe's marriage situation and that everyone agrees on. Exactly how to spell out this Isha Chushis, which we never heard of in other places. So again, this also goes to the fragmentary status of these stories. In some sense, they're giving us glimpses of stories and glimpses of challenges that there were, glimpses of cash questions that are only partially resolved. And we don't entirely know who this Isha Kushis is and what's the story with her. But we know the response, the part of the story that the Torah wants us to know. And again, Vayish, and they say, and this is the explicit thing that they say. This is their language, they're a quote from them, Vayomru, and they say, Rak ach b'moisha deber Hashem, ulei gam bonen deber. So Moshe is acting in some kind of way of privilege. Maybe the point is like he's taking another woman, he's taking too many women, or according to Chazal, the opposite, he's not with his wife, and we're also prophets, which we understand that this is not okay. So in other words, they're comparing themselves, they're saying, Moshe doesn't deserve to have whichever privilege or whichever level that he has, claims to have, and the way he acts with. We're also prophets, and as like I said, this very much goes back to the previous parsha. But of course, Miriam and Aharon are said. Miriam is explicitly said to be a prophet already in Parshas Bishalach. Aharon is explicitly, of course, Chazal are not entirely happy with that. But Aharon explicitly, the Pesukim in Parshas Sefer Shemois explicitly describe Hashem speaking to Aharon, just as they describe him speaking to Moshe. So they're saying he's not greater than us. These are, of course, Moshe and Aharon's siblings, and Moshe's siblings, right? Miriam and Aharon, his older siblings, even. And Vayishma Hashem, so just like earlier, there's this interesting story where, interesting like description, the last two stories we had the same thing. Like people complain, people say something, and God is eavesdropping, God heard. And now here we have another insertion by the narrator. The narrator says, this was not correct. So this complaint obviously is some kind of way in which Moshe is acting in a way of privilege, in a way of being above the people. And the Torah says this is not true. This is a very extreme superlative language. Moshe was the most humble person of any person to ever live. In other words, they're complaining that Moshe is acting with the opposite of humility. He's acting with arrogance, or we could say maybe snobbily, which is the opposite of anava. And the Torah says, no, Moshe actually acted very nicely to everyone. He spoke to people on equal footing. He didn't act in the way of the opposite of another. But apparently, they interpreted something that he did as the opposite of that. And now we have Hashem's response. Ve'yemer Hashem pis'oim. So suddenly, this suddenly is meant to signify something like unexpected, something like they did not realize that this is going to happen. So there's some harshness in this pis'oim. He speaks to these three people, Moshe, Aharon, and Miriam. So also to Moshe. And it says, go to the Olmo. So in other words, we remember from before, that's the meeting place, right? Olmo literally means the set upon place where meetings happen, where Hashem speaks to Moshe. So they all go out. So they go out. So we should understand out of the camp, out of where they were, to the Olmo. And Hashem descends with his cloud, with his pillar of cloud, to the Pesach Oil, which we discussed, which is the place, the meeting place. This is where the great assemblies happen. And he calls to Aharon and Miriam. So, and they go out. So out of where? Not clear. Maybe they're in the Olmud and they go out of it, or they go out further out of the camp, closer to Hashem. So this is Hashem speaking specifically only to them. So he called Moshe there somehow. Moshe is also part of the audience, but he's not speaking to Moshe. He's speaking to Aharon and Miriam very specifically. Moshe might have heard this. Might be a little weird to think that Moshe didn't hear it. And maybe he's also eavesdropping on this like conversation the same way that Hashem is eavesdropping all this time. But Moshe is not spoken to. He's spoken about. So that's very explicitly. He speaks to them. And this is what he tells them. Shimon Odevare, listen to me. If you're, yes, you are prophets. If you are prophets of Hashem, Imyen V'yachem Hashem, and this is one of the instances of Hashem saying his name, Hashem Avaya, in third person. If Hashem speaks to you, and then he goes back to first person, it's in the vision or in a dream. And I make myself known to you, to the prophet, to Aharon and Miriam, in a vision, or I speak to him in a dream. But Moshe is not like this. My servant Moshe is not like this. He is trustworthy in my whole house. I speak to him mouth to mouth, which is another idiom that means the same thing as face to face, with a vision but without riddles. And he sees my image. He glimpses or stares at my image. And therefore, why are you not afraid to speak about my servant Moshe? So what he seems to be saying is, and this is why, of course, the Rambam found this as a very explicit statement of the prophecy of Moshe being of a different quality as any other prophets. He says, your argument was, Rak ach b'moshe deber Hashem, alegam b'ni deber. The answer is, you're wrong. You don't understand that there's a difference. Hashem speaks to you, yes, in dreams, in visions. He speaks to Moshe also in visions, but in some level of clarity of visions, not with riddles. He speaks to you in visions. You see something in a dream. You don't clearly see him. You don't see him, we could say, during the day. You're not trustworthy. In other words, I reveal everything that I have to say, my like inner secrets, like someone who is Neman Baiser, right? Is trustworthy in the home means something like it said in by Eshes Patifar, the Yosef said about his master. He leaves all the matters of the house to me. So he doesn't like hide anything from him because he's scared he's going to steal it or take control of it. Moshe gets on everything. He is part of this. He is not an outsider looking in. He gets the full permission. He has the full trust to see everything. But you don't have the full trust. Sometimes at night you get a vision, something like that. It's not in the same sense of trust. It's not in the same sense of personal. Pe means personal, speaking person to person, so to speak. Seeing the image of God directly, that's not what you get. You get some non-direct, and how to spell this out theologically and mystically or in the levels of prophecy is a question, but I'm just trying to stay at the level of the text says. It clearly is saying that you are not like Moshe. Moshe is not like you. Therefore, you should be afraid of speaking about my servant Moshe. And again, servant, it's an interesting thing to notice. In the entire Tanakh, almost servant is a term of endearment, a term of honor. It's not the diminishing Moshe. It's saying Moshe is only a servant. There isn't a higher level than being a servant. Servant, so like we have avde pare, servant in this sense means something more closer to like ministers, to like people I trust. It's not saying Moshe is something low. It's saying Moshe is something high. He is mine. So servant, we can interpret this as saying that the word eved, which of course does mean slave in different contexts, but what it's talking about is the belongingness of the slave, more than the lowliness of the slave, in which is that he doesn't have agency. That's not the point. The point in these descriptions of slavery is the belongingness of the slave, the closeness. It entirely belongs to me. And belonging is, of course, something that can be very intimate, can be loving. It doesn't need to be out of fear. It's saying you should be fearful of speaking in Moshe because he is not in your level. And now, and that's the statement. That's what he says, answering their argument. So this might be interesting because there might not be, we have to be medayik, we have to read all the other complaints. In many of them, at least, God doesn't entirely answer the complaints. We did see that, like, when Moshe complains and he says, I can't carry all this, this is too great of a burden for me, and Hashem sort of agrees and gives him people to help with his burden. But that's also in an angry way. This is also in somewhat an angry way, but there is an answer to the complaint. It's not like to the extent that the complaint is not just complaining, it's not just whining, there's some content in it, God answers that content. And then, Vayichar af Hashem bam vayalech. Hashem is mad at them and he leaves, he goes away. And of course, this angriness, this anger that is angry at them, in them, is not explained. What does it mean? I think we're supposed to explain that what happens in the next moment is the expression of God's anger. So that's what happens. Vayelech, and in other words, this pasuk, both the anger and the vayelech, are spelled out in the next pasuk. So the vayelech is va'onan sar me'al oil. The cloud disappears, it raises up from the oil. So that's vayelech. And where's the af Hashem? V'hine Miriam et tziras kashal ksadon. Miriam has tziras as snow. So snow is maybe a nice thing, but it's interesting that in the Torah, at least, I think snow is only used as an image of whiteness. So this white leprosy or whatever it is, the disease that is tzaras, compared to the whiteness of snow, or maybe the texture of snow or something like that. But so that's Miriam. And Aharon turns to Miriam and he sees that. So there's something unclear here, because why would only Miriam be punished if Aharon is also speaking with her? Maybe this Vayif and Aharon Miriam is trying to show that in some sense Aharon is included in the punishment. There's like Miriam suddenly being Metziras and Aharon turning to her and seeing her Metziras. Maybe that bothers him too. So they understand that they have sinned against Moshe. They have not respected him. And therefore Aharon turns to Moshe and he tells him and he begs him for forgiveness. He says, Be Adoni, please, my Lord, don't put a sin upon us. In other words, don't blame us, right? Al natosh lanichas, do not blame us. We've been silly and we've sinned. So this is like a vidui. This is one of the very explicit instances of a kind of vidui. We had something like that by the brothers talking to Yosef and other places. But this is one of the instances. Of course, there's also Moshe speaking to Hashem. In any case, there's an admission of guilt. The taking your responsibility on yourself is one of the important parts of reconciliation, of vide, but they're saying also don't blame us. In other words, don't punish us. Don't put our sin on us, which means something like don't let the results of our sin stay on us. And then here there's a very enigmatic pasuk, the second half. Nobody really knows the meaning of it. It says Al nosi kamais asher betzaisem erechem ima ve'yochel chatziv esore. Do not be like a dead person, like a dead something, which as he leaves his mother's womb, half of his flesh is eaten. The most plausible or somewhat close reading to this would be something like, look, we're your brothers. We've both came out of the same womb. And so therefore, we're like half your flesh. So having Miriam literally being afflicted in her flesh, right? Saras is something that's sort of a disease of the flesh, is eating her up. So don't be like that. So you hurting us is also hurting yourself in some sense, since we're siblings. So this is like the reason why you should forgive us. And Moshe forgives. Moshe, like he does to the people, always he goes to Hashem. Ve'itzak Moshe l'Hashem, he prays or demands from God, El norefon Allah, God, please heal her. Famously, this is the most shortest prayer. It's a 5-word prayer, and that was more than enough. He really got what he needed. So from here we learn in the Talmud Bavli, Masechtas Brachas, that there is no prayer too long and no prayer too short. Once Moshe prayed for 40 days, once he prayed for 5 words, how do we know which is which? We don't know. But sometimes that's all that's needed, and sometimes 40 days are not enough. And Hashem answers Moshe. Also, something somewhat enigmatic, again, and the enigma in both has to do with this family relation going on. And obviously, it's enigmatic, probably when the Pesuk was written, people understood what this means. It's enigmatic to us because we lost the language, we don't know the idioms, what they mean. There's in every language, in every culture, there's these idioms that don't literally mean what they mean, but everyone knows what they mean, and many of the terms in the Torah we forgot, so we don't really know what this means. But we can see from the words that there's some expressions that are probably expressing how people should interact with their siblings or with their parents and so on. And Moshe, Hashem tells to Moshe something that is halfway answering. He's saying, yes, I will forgive her, I will heal her, but also not entirely. So there should be something in between. And he says, well, if her father would have spit in her face, she would have been embarrassed for 7 days. So in other words, yes, okay, al nasi kamez, very good, but you should take this more seriously. You should somewhat, like, if your father spits in a daughter's face, she's embarrassed for 7 days. And that's like, maybe that's also like a cultural thing. Like, for 7 days, you act in like mourning, like we have mourning for 7 days, things like that. So therefore, she should be tisoga. She should be, I don't think we should read this as being locked, but something like locked out or put out or put in some kind of segregation outside the camp for 7 days, and then Teosef, she will come back, gathered back into, right, become back part of the thing. Of course, it's why I'm saying that this is a kind of in-between situation, because earlier in Parshas Metzora, we already had this concept of lehazgir es haneged, to segregate the nega, or to quarantine the nega for 7 days, explicitly as a kind of in-between stage, right? We don't know if it's tumah, then there's something worse than 7 days being musgar. You have to go entirely out of the camp and so on. And if it's tor, if there's not a problem at all, there's no hasgara. Hasgara is some in-between state, like we see it as a waiting state or like a quarantine state, like we're to see if the sickness will spread or something like that. But here also, this is given a moral reading. It means also she will, like, she should have literally this halacha of hasgara for 7 days to see if the tzaras that she got will last. And obviously the implication is that it won't last. It's a one-time thing. It will be going away. It will be stop being infectious or whatever. It will disappear after 7 days. But she deserves this because of this reasoning called aviyah yorek yorek befanah. So that's Hashem's answer, and that's what happened. Miriam gets nizgar outside the camp for 7 days, and the people are waiting for her until she comes back. Adi Osef Miriam. So here we see, of course, Miriam's position. Am le'nosa, also, always, as we said earlier, means everyone, also including the low class, at least. Some people always say whenever it says am, it means the low class. That might not necessarily be correct, but at least includes everyone. It's not saying Moshe told them not to travel until Miriam comes, it's saying the people didn't travel until Miriam came back, and that shows us that she had some leadership here. She wasn't just a passive player in this whole story, and that's why they wouldn't agree to leave her outside of the camp. And after those 7 days, they left Chatzeres. Of course, their story started with them getting to Chatzeres, and they moved to Midbar Param, which was the next stop, and that's where we have the next story.